You're listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
This Green Bay Packers podcast is brought to you by Mayfield Sports Marketing, our official sports marketing agent for player appearances. To book a Packers player for your next event, go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances. Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
These Seattle guys, what the is this? These guys are like, oh, I got a big contract a year later. Yeah, I want more money. It's like, you're not like some rookie making $700,000 who had a huge year and is like, why won't they pay me?
Oh, boy.
We have seen big plays from Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers.
I'm at your service.
All season long.
Last tempo, we got to bring some energy and some life.
Oh, the Mega Donut Podcast.
We got to get this thing amped up.
With them great guys, Chris and Adam. Even Aaron likes them.
Are you kidding me? I love them.
Packer Nation, all Mega Donut listeners and followers. I'm Adam Simmers, joined by my bestest friend in the world, Chris Lempesis. The rematch is here, Chris. Revenge week.
Yes. It has been a long wait, but we are finally getting another crack at the Seahawks. You know, it's funny, as I'm saying that, it's been a long wait. Really, we've just been waiting. There hasn't been any football, though.
That's the thing. Like, we just played Seattle 2 games ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's like, it's like, I'm like, it's been a long wait, but really, there was no football going on. So I guess it hasn't been that long. I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a long summer, long off season.
We've certainly had to sit on the disappointment for a long time.
Would you rather have this? Because they're going to play the Seahawks regardless this upcoming season. Would you rather have the Seahawks now, like early, like week 2, or have this game linger on until like week 10 or 11?
Oh, I want it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, no wait. That would have been terrible if we had to wait till like,
I know,
like November, like God forbid December for this. Like, no. I wanted another crack. I mean, shit, man, when that game ended, I would have played those guys the next day if they could have.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like,
it's always nice when the game that everyone has circled on their calendars, fans, players, everyone in general, is you don't have to wait that long for
it. No, Adam. Adam, this is just another game, according to the Packers.
Yeah, bullshit.
I know. Like, I love that, like, and the, you know, and I don't like to harp too much on the press that covers this team, because I think by and large they do a really good job, but like, it was amazing how much the media was eating that shit up this week, and no one was calling them out on it. Like, you guys are full of shit. Like, they're all like, just 1-16. Just 1-16. Just another week at the office. Like, bullshit.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, okay, if you want to downplay last year, like, hey, we're looking ahead, we're not dwelling in the past. Well, okay then, Seattle's gonna be pretty damn good again this year. You know, they lost against St. Louis.
Yep.
They're gonna be right in the thick of it. You know, you beat Seattle, you have a tiebreaker that might come in handy for playoffs in 2015. So if you don't even know how to dwell on last year's NFC Championship game, this is still an important game for two teams that are probably going to be most likely are going to be making the playoffs. So you may want to win this game and take it, not that they're not taking it seriously, but this game is not just another game.
No.
Because of the future implications as well.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a huge game. I don't want to get too hot takey. Because
yeah,
we try to avoid that on the show, and we do a good job of it. But I'll be honest, with the circumstances in this game, right? Like, how do I say this? Like, everything that happened, right? Like, not just the NFC Championship game, but like getting your ass kicked by them in the season opener last year, the fail Mary, like all of that disappointment, and pain that the Seahawks have caused this team, you're finally getting them in your building on Sunday Night Football. The Seahawks are missing probably the heart. I would say Chancellor's the heart of that defense. Mm-hmm. They're without the heart of their defense. Their offensive line is like, it's all set up for the Packers win. If they can't win this game Sunday night, I don't think that they're a Super Bowl team.
It's tough for me to say to go that far because they're just week two, but I would have serious doubts.
Yeah, right. That's a good way to put it. I'm not saying they're not.
Because we've seen this team so many times over the years start off the season slow and then work the way into a Super Bowl contender.
You're right. Yeah. That's what I want to say. That's what I'm saying. I don't want to get too hot takey and be like, they're not a Super Bowl team. But like you said, you said it better. I would have serious doubts. But it feels like at some point you have to beat these guys, right? Like, don't you have to?
Yeah. And I think you want to go on a little bit of a run here. You look at this game as a momentum game. You lose this game, grand scheme of it all, the big picture, you can still rebound. There's still 14 weeks left. But you win this game, you exact revenge, you put your foot down, like, you know what? We're done being pushed over. This is our house.
Exactly.
We're gonna put our foot down, and we're going to take the next step over Seattle. Because until, you know, it's a cliche, but until you beat them, you can't be better than them.
Yep.
And you use this game as a little bit of momentum, and then you look at the next – you know, month and a half, you'd be sitting pretty nicely heading into midseason. Because if you lose this game, you got, as we saw, you know, they lost to Denver last on Thursday night. We're recording this on a Friday. Kansas City's not going to be a pushover at San Francisco. Not sure about them.
Yep.
But then you look at, well, St. Louis, yeah, that team's for real. San Diego's going to be in the playoff picture. Denver, Carolina. So, this game can set up for a very nice momentum swing to go on a run and really cement them as, if not one of the best team in the NFL, if not the NFC.
Right. Yeah, well said. And I just think it would speak to the mindset of this team. If they can come out and get a win, however they get it. If you can get a win over these guys on Sunday night, then it's like, all right, like, here we go. This shit's real now. Like, this is a real contending team. Whereas if they are to lose Sunday night, then I think you'll just start thinking like, oh, I don't know, is this team any different than they were last year? Like, and that's why, yeah, I think this is a huge game. I don't really think you can overstate the importance of this game, in fact, for this team.
Because even if they lose this game and then they go on and, you know, going 11-5, 12-4, they get their first win, kind of just like last year, where
you're gonna think this team is really good.
This seems really good, but you got that lingering effect of Seattle over you.
Right, that one and mountain, like, that you haven't been able to climb yet.
So even if they go lose this game, rebound, win the division, get a first round bye, Seattle makes the playoffs, and all of a sudden, oh, Seattle's still there. Well, we can win it all, but we have to get through Seattle again.
Can we do it?
And no one's going to have confidence after four straight losses.
No, right. That's what I mean. It's like, yeah, you nailed it. It's so huge. It's such an epic. It's Sunday night's so epic.
Well, let's wrap up before we get into the storylines for Sunday night, because there's a few of them we want to talk about.
Oh, yeah,
obviously. And we're recording this a little later in the week. Usually record this on a Thursday, Wednesday or Thursday, so it's up Friday morning.
My fault. I've been under the weather. So
someone decided to get sick.
I know.
Blame him.
Damn it.
So recording this on Friday night. But it actually I think it leads well more to a preview of the game on Sunday. There's one thing we'll talk about here in a few minutes that really is a good talking point that we would have missed if we would have recorded this yesterday. But let's wrap up the Bears game quickly. A lot has been said. A lot has been written. Don't want to be the eighth take on the Bears. But so I think, you know, my 30-second take was, it wasn't pretty at times. It showed some weaknesses in this team. I never felt this team was going to lose the game. And I felt like they were saving a lot for week two.
Yes.
They ran a very vanilla offense, and that's for sure. Not a whole lot I'm super worried about. It's week one. Everyone doesn't look their best in week one. Some little causes for concern, especially with the run defense. And losing Barrington, I think, is probably maybe the biggest takeaway out of that game for me.
Yeah, we'll get to Barrington here in a minute when we talk about the injuries. But yeah, I think, well said. I think it was kind of the classic that was a game that a good team wins and a bad team loses.
Yeah.
And the Pack, you know, like they didn't play. They weren't great. They weren't terrible.
That's a thing. They weren't terrible.
They were sloppy. The penalties, I mean, in terms of you're looking for negatives, obviously the run defense was bad. The penalties were a concern.
But every team commits a lot of penalties early.
That's
in the
true.
Year.
I'm still worried about Tim Mastay. But, like, other than that, I actually don't think that there were that many. You know, I know, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, with, you know, kind of freaking out on Twitter about at different points in the game.
You never freak out on Twitter.
I do all the time. But good or bad. But I was guilty of that, especially in the first half, of kind of losing my shit a little bit. But then, you know, when the game ended and I sort of had a few hours to think about it, then especially like into Monday morning, I was like, you know, they weren't terrible. Like, I know a lot of Packer fans were probably almost acting like they had lost, but really they only had a few trouble spots. Rodgers was brilliant in somewhat limited time on the field. You know, the passing offense was great. Eddie Lacy, I felt like, got better as the game went on. The offensive line looked good. I don't really have any issues with the offense. And I thought the pass defense was good. Of course, Cutler has something to do with that. Cutler, the Bears, for all this talk about, oh, Adam Gase, and you and I were joking about this, I think, on the pod last week.
Yeah.
About, oh, it's a different Cutler this year. He's the same guy, and that really came through when the Bears needed him to win. You know, because in the second half of that game, I thought the Packers, I'm kind of rambling here, but I thought the Packers got better against Forte, especially in the second half.
Yeah, I agree.
And it became more of the onus was on Cutler to kind of keep things going, and he just couldn't. He still sucks. Yeah. When the Bears need him to be great, he really sucks.
Oh, old habits die hard.
Right? It's like, all right, Jay, we need you. And he just shits all over himself. He's the same guy. But I thought the pass defense had something to do with that, too, I thought, except for Sam Shields. I thought they were good.
Yeah, it's one – I mean, you hit the nail on the head. They weren't great, but they weren't terrible. That's the thing. It's week one. It's – unless you're playing against Jameis Winston, it's really hard to blow any team out week one, I think.
Yeah.
Especially a divisional opponent. And if I'm a neutral football fan watching that game, don't have a you know, opponent in the race – just watching it because it's on TV. I actually would have been more impressed with Chicago than disappointed in Green Bay. I think Chicago played a little bit over their heads.
That's fair to say. And, you know, and that's probably not surprising in hindsight, you know. You got a new coach. Everybody kind of wants to impress the new coach. You're playing at home.
It's a home opener.
Home opener, like you said, divisional rival. And these guys are professionals, you know.
Yeah, there's...
They weren't just going to roll over. They weren't just going to roll over and let Green Bay pound them. They probably will on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I mean, as much as
then,
yeah,
but not
as much as as much as all the fans and us included, and you know, a lot of the just the national media think Chicago's probably going to be pretty bad this year, and that's true. I mean, I think Chicago will be pretty bad this year. However, the players don't think that way. They may think that way once they're 2-8, but week one, we may not have a whole lot of optimism for the Bears. Bears fans may not have a whole lot of optimism for them, but you know the players will have optimism.
Sure.
So, I mean, and you said they're professionals. It's hard to blow a team week one.
It really is. And well said. And I can't really think of anything else to add about the game. Yeah.
No. We can switch gears to, I think the main talking point heading into Seattle besides our, I guess, opening monologue, I guess we could call it that.
Yeah.
I guess the big thing this week is injuries.
Yep.
And it started with Sam Barrington earlier this week. That looks like he's going to be gone for at least – did he get – if I missed it, I apologize and do my research to the fullest. Did he get put on the
– He did.
The IR designated return list yet?
No, he's not designated return. He's a straight
– Oh, he's not.
He's a straight IR. He's done.
I thought he might have been put on the designated.
He's done.
List.
They IR'd him so they could activate Dayton. Hotbox.
Hotbox is back.
Hotbox is back this week.
Which, based on Matt Forte and Beast Mode coming into town, we're going to need him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Barrington, you know, he didn't look particularly good in that game. I mean, before he got hurt, his limitations in coverage are what they are. Barrington is between the tackles, in the box, thumper, an inside linebacker. Not to say that he's not valuable, because you always need guys like that. But Barrington, I mean, how do I don't want to.
He's a younger, cheaper version of AJ Hawk.
Right, or Des Bishop, someone said, too. I don't think I don't want to downplay his injury too much, but I was surprised that everybody's sort of throwing their hands up like, oh, my God, we lost Barrington. I'm like, I like Barrington, but sort of how much – sort of everything I liked about him was projection, you know what I mean? Like, he hadn't really been a playmaker yet in this defense. We were expecting him to become one, but it's not like they lost a proven playmaker.
Yeah, Barrington's not the linchpin in this defense. You lost a starter. That's a blow.
Sure.
But I don't think the guys behind Barrington, you said it's all based on projection. The reality of it as right now, I don't think the guys behind Barrington, I don't think the talent gap is that severe.
No, I mean, Nate Palmer is sort of, he's sort of Barrington's opposite in that Palmer's strengths tend to come in coverage, I think. So you lose a little bit there. It's going to be kind of on Jake Ryan now, I think.
Yeah, and everyone was pretty excited for Jake Ryan coming in the season, and he's going to be a player week two. And, I mean, the thing that concerns me most about losing Barrington is not Barrington himself, is that they just don't have a whole lot of depth at middle linebacker.
No, and as of now, I guess they're going to go with, I'm surprised by this, but they're going to go with three. They're going to go with Matthews, Ryan, and Nate Palmer. Although I think that's going to change at some point. I would expect probably once Guyon comes back, or maybe if things don't go well this week, I think Carl Bradford will get called up.
Yeah, it seems that at some point they're just seeing a warm body. And I'm fine with Jake Ryan and Nate Palmer as the two middle linebackers heading in the rest of the season, but it's just like they have no one behind them, and they're one more injury away of Clay Matthews becoming a full-time middle linebacker, which we've seen that he could handle last year, but
right.
As we've always said, you put Clay inside, yeah, that's fine, but then you lose your best pass rusher.
And I think he's kind of going that way. I mean, he was primarily inside on Sunday against the Bears, but you said now losing Barrington, it's like, you know, when you had Barrington, that's probably the biggest thing that stinks losing him, is that when you had Barrington, you could still move, when talking about when they're in base now, you could move Matthews outside and, you know, go with Ryan or Palmer next, you know, at that other spot, because you still had Barrington, who knows the defense and is a somewhat established player. But now with Barrington out, it's like Matthews is going to have to stay inside the entire time.
And that's a bit more onus.
Ryan. I would.
Yeah, and they're. That's going to put more onus on the other pass rushers. I mean, we all know what Julius can do, and he did in week one. But it's going to. If Matthews is going to play inside more, okay, that's how it's going to be. And with Lynch coming in town and Charles and Carlos Hyde the next 3 weeks, three really good running backs, maybe more beneficial to just keep Matthews inside. However, that puts more pressure on guys, obviously like Perry and Neal, but also Jaron Elliott and Andy Malumba,
yep,
to actually be a factor, not just be – I'm talking about more or less the latter two guys, Malumba and Elliott. Can they translate what they did in the preseason into the regular season? If they can, then the loss of Matthews on the outside won't be that severe.
And I think Elliott, you saw on Sunday – man, it was in there at least once on Cutler, if not twice. So he was doing some.
Yeah.
And their defensive line is going to have to step it up. Mike Daniels, I thought he was okay on Sunday, but he was sort of quiet. I thought Raji was really, really good. We talked about that before we started recording, that we thought Raji played really well.
Yeah, that's a nice pivot, because I want to talk about Raji.
Both against the run and getting to the quarterback. And I was like, I thought he looked really good, and that's going to be a big key now.
I'm not ready to go total vintage Raji, but
no.
Is as good as. Yeah, I know it's just one game, and everyone overreacts, and we can be guilty of that too, but at least after one game, this is the best I've seen out of BJ Raji in a few years.
Probably you have to go back to, I was thinking about this the other day, probably have to go back to late 2012.
Yeah.
I thought he was really good right towards the end of 2012, but that's a long time. I mean, he said almost 3 years.
Yeah, and if that's for real, that makes this defense a whole lot better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, leaps and bounds. If Raji is even close to that form of vintage Raji. I like that vintage Raji. That's good.
Yeah. He's still the most talented defensive lineman this team has.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. And if he can keep playing, if he can keep duplicating what he did on Sunday, that's gonna be really important.
And that's gonna help out the middle linebackers as well.
Yep.
But if Raji can be a force in the middle, you can get by with Palmer and Ryan the rest of the year.
Well, and it helps your pass rushers from the outside, too.
Yeah.
I mean, look at all the guys New England's had success with over the years, various names, an outside linebacker. I think a big part of that was because they had Wilfork in the middle.
Yeah, absolutely.
The line of scrimmage, there's just such a ripple effect that goes all the way out, you know? And they haven't had that for a while.
It's going to be interesting to see how they do it against arguably a better offense this Sunday. I would not say it in better offensive line because I just seen those highlights of that Seattle-St. Louis game.
Well, they got whooped.
I'm not saying you're going to even ponder the idea that Green Bay can do what Seattle did because St. Louis did. Because St. Louis has perhaps – I don't say perhaps. I'll just follow safe. They have the best defensive line in all of football.
They do.
Green Bay doesn't. But
they do, and indoors on that turf, they can really fly. Those pass rushers fly. That's something Green Bay won't have quite as much outside. But yeah.
And that's how St. Louis built their team, and it's working.
Yeah, they dumped their resources into having the best defensive line in football, and that's what they have now.
But reading some quotes after the game, see if I can pull it up quick while recording is Michael Brocker said some very interesting things that. Basically hinted to Seattle was pretty predictable on the line, and they knew.
Didn't Brocker say that he knew the final play, what it was going to be?
Yeah, and that they knew of all the changes in Seattle's offensive line that where their weaknesses were that you can definitely attack them. And when you have a guy talent, this kind of carries back over to what we're talking about with Raji. If Raji can somewhat duplicate what St. Louis did in the lower, just have the same premise what they're trying to do. This offensive line can be beat by Seattle. That's their definite weakness on probably their whole team.
Yeah, and I mean, I know, you know, we're saying Green Bay doesn't have what St. Louis has, but we don't have chopped liver either, you know? I mean, Mike Daniels, Clay, Peppers, Mike Neal, if Raji can, again,
Dayton Jones is obviously a talent. He's a first-round pick. They have talent on that. They have talent in that front seven. They just have to put it all together. This is what Brocker said.
Okay.
He said it's in reference to their offensive line. He had a few quotes about picking up tendencies, but it's very makeshift. You have a lot of guys who aren't playing positions that they started when they came into the league. You have Sweezy, who was a really good guard in the league, but he used to be a defensive tackle. Britt played tackle last year. Now he moved inside a guard. You got a lot of people who aren't playing a position that they started with or playing a new position. And when you got things like that, you know, you got a great defense lineman, you have to take advantage of that. We came out with 6 sacks, and we got a lot of pressure on Wilson.
Yeah, I didn't see too much of that game, but definitely watching the highlights, it was...
And this is interesting that what St. Louis tried to do, and it was successful. When you, I mean, let's remember, Russell Wilson's making, was his contract $100 million? I know he's making at least $20
million
a year.
I think it was like an $84 million extension.
Over like four years.
Yeah.
We try to make them one-dimensional. You try to take away the run game and make them pass, and they played right into our hands. If that's not Damian Pollard, St. Louis's passing game, I don't know what it is.
Seattle's, yeah. No, I agree.
I'm keeping confusing those two cities. But.
Well, here's the thing with Seattle, and we could talk about this now, too. They, you know, when they traded for Jimmy Graham, and I'm guilty of this as anybody, I was like, oh, shit, like, they got Jimmy Graham now, like Russell Wilson, Lynch, and Jimmy Graham on the same offense? Because he was obviously the headliner in that trade. But then sort of as time goes on, you go, they kind of only really had like two, maybe three good offensive linemen. And Unger was, I think, their best offensive lineman. I think he's even better than Okung. And they traded him. And, you know, we obviously know, how important centers are. Everybody knows how important centers are. They're like the brains of the offensive line.
Not only did they trade away their best offensive lineman, they also traded away their first-round pick. So it wasn't just a swap for a swap. If they would have did that, well, then they could replace them in the first round.
Right, and that's what it's like, you know, and sort of as you thought about the Graham trade, as time passed, it was like, yeah, he's a nice, flashy toy, but are they going to be able to protect Russell Wilson? Because, I mean, the Packers got pretty good pressure on him in that NFC Championship game, too, and it's like... That was with Unger, so it's like, well, are they going to be able to do this? And then watching them last week in St. Louis, it was like, well, they're not off to a good start.
And I think that's how the Packers have to come out. If you're going to lose this game, lose it for coming out flying and have Wilson beat you in the air. Stack the box, get pressure on Wilson. If Wilson beats you outside the pocket, I think that's the gamble that Capers has to take.
Oh, yeah, because their receivers – I know everybody's talking about this Tyler Lockett kid because he brought the punt back last week or whatever. He might be the treat.
Oh, that's nice.
Their receivers are garbage. They're garbage. Doug Baldwin – if Doug Baldwin played for the Green Bay Packers, he'd be maybe the number three receiver, maybe.
Yeah.
They're garbage. They don't have good receivers. Like you said, like the whole thing in this game is just going to be can they get to Wilson enough and can they shut down Lynch or at least contain Lynch?
Yeah, Jimmy Graham doesn't worry me. Does he worry you?
No, not really. That's the thing. He doesn't really worry me. A, because I think Graham is soft. I just
– Yeah, he is.
He's a soft – you know, he's not one of these – it's not like they're playing Gronk or like Kelsey or something. So Graham makes the highlight reel plays or whatever, but – No, he's just not. Even when he was with the Saints, he never really scared me when Green Bay would play them. The only guy on their offense that really scares me is Lynch.
Yeah, I'd have to agree.
And again, if you can't, and Lynch is a great player, but, you know, I was saying this right after the game last week, after their game ended against St. Louis. Lynch is a great player. Lynch can't run through seven guys. You know what I mean?
No, we saw that last week.
If you can't block for him, then he's just as average as anybody else.
This team would be a lot more scary if they had, I think, not so much Jimmy Graham, but just a burner at receiver. If they had a Randall Cobb type, which Tyler Lockett may end up being.
Yeah, I think Lockett is right now a pretty good player.
Because this team would be very dangerous with a solid play action, but they don't have a guy to do that.
No. I didn't. Yeah, I just.
Defensively, you stack the box. I know it's only week one, but I think the books were in on Seattle. Like, granted, St. Louis has a lot better defense than the Packers do, but you beat up the offensive line, you force Wilson a pass. Graham's the only really threat they have. St. Louis basically shadowed Graham with two players last week. I'm sure Green Bay will do the same.
Yep.
All right, Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett, let's see what you can do.
You got to run a lot of base. I think in that game last week you saw every time the Packers – went to their nickel look, the Bears just ran the ball right at them. And then it felt like as the second half went on, the Packers, especially, well, really just to start the second half, and as it progressed, it felt like the Packers ran base more.
Yeah,
and they had more success against the run. And I think that's exactly what they have to do Sunday night. Like you said, shadow Graham with two guys, go base, go with your 3-4 look. And Russ, if you want to put the ball up 35 or 40 times, by all means. Because he might throw two or three touchdowns, but he's going to throw two or three interceptions too.
Yeah, based on what our middle linebacker depth is, I could see how Capers would be very easy if they want to go nickel right away, make basically nickel their new base, which could be fine in a lot of weeks. But last week wasn't one of them, and this week shouldn't be one either. Is that if you run a lot of base, like I'll reiterate what you said, they didn't shut down Forte. They contained him in the second half. And that's what they had to do with Lynch. And Wilson's a lot better quarterback than Cutler. But the one thing that Cutler has was Alshon Jeffery. And Jeffery made some plays in the second half when they ran base. But it didn't hurt them.
Right.
Seattle doesn't have a player like that. As good as Jimmy Graham is, he's not a 6'3" wide receiver with the talent of Alshon Jeffery. He's a tight end.
Right.
And he will always be a tight end. And Wilson's not Drew Brees.
Right, unless your name is Rob Gronkowski, you're only going to take over a game so much as a tight end.
Yeah,
there's one
now in the red zone. Yeah, Jimmy Graham's the guy you are going to be looking for, but between the 20s,
nah, I'm not really worried about Jimmy Graham there.
Yeah,
right. No, well said. And I think getting a lead is going to be so huge in this game too. Like you gotta. I mean, I think they're already going to go with looks that force Wilson to throw the ball a lot, but you gotta really press. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let's switch. You want to switch gears to
offense?
Yeah,
let's talk
now?
About offense.
And I think we're both basically saying that Seattle's probably going to try to do a lot what Chicago did, but if Green Bay does defensively against Chicago, they do again this week, probably going to end up being fine.
If they go more to the looks that they used in the second half last week, I think that they. I don't know if you can ever shut Lynch down, but like, what did St. Louis hold him to? Like 72 yards on 18 carries. If you can do that, you're fine.
That's a win.
Because Lynch, I mean, I didn't know this for my, I guess it's WTMJ now, piece this week. I wrote about teams that could kind of duplicate Chicago's approach. And teams that were best suited to do that, and obviously Seattle is one of them. I didn't realize this. Lynch averages 5.2 yards a carry against the Packers in his three games with Seattle.
That's a little scary.
5.2 yards a carry, about 120-something yards a game, and a touchdown. That's like his average against Green Bay. So, but he always has a lot. You know, he's always had at least 20 carries. I think the goal with Lynch is you try to keep him under 20.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I think, going to be a big number on Sunday night.
So switching gears to offense, I think the story. Should we just start with the story of the week?
Yeah, Brian Bulaga.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to bury the lead, but I don't think we can.
Does he time his knee? I asked this on Twitter too. Does he time his knee injuries for Seattle?
It's getting to the point where you almost want to beg the question: is he scared of Seattle?
He got hurt last year. Now in the game, and now he's getting hurt this year. It's like. Yeah, sprained MCL in practice. Sounds like they dodged at least a big bullet, but they didn't dodge it completely because he's not going to play this week. And McCarthy told reporters today that he wouldn't really discuss anything beyond this week, which is not really super promising.
No, it's kind of worrisome to me that they ruled him out on Friday.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, we talked about this before we went on air. Not to be too callous about the whole thing, but... People are saying, well, you know, it's the same injury he had last year against Seattle. He only missed that half of a game or whatever it was, and he was back the next week. You have to remember something. He's not in a contract here anymore now.
That changes everything.
It changes everything. So people are like, well, he'll come back. I'm like, he just got his money. So not that I'm saying Brian Bulaga necessarily, you know, is that kind of guy, but odds are he is, I guess, right?
Yeah, it's... I think all professional athletes are, once you get paid...
Right, there's less of like, oh, I gotta get back in the lineup.
But the other point to your statement was that, yeah, he played through the same injury last year, but it's not really good you have the same reoccurring injury either. Usually when you re-injure yourself, it's worse the second time.
Yeah.
You know?
Sunday night will be the 25th of the last 50 games that Brian Bulaga has missed.
That's not a good number.
That's
man.
Not a good number, right? It's not good that these knee injuries keep piling up for him. It's like he played through it last year and was quite good, and then but now it's like, oh, he's getting hurt again on it. It's definitely a worry, especially because of all the money that they paid him,
mm-hmm.
which I was in favor of when they did it and still am. But just anytime, you know, a knee injury is a little bit different when a guy's on a so-so contract as opposed to a big money contract.
Yeah. And reoccurring knee injuries are not a good thing. I don't care what position you play.
Right.
So I don't want to think too far ahead about Bulaga.
Let's just talk about how it affects things this week.
Yes, please. Let's
well,
that, cause...
let's. I'll say this first. I've seen a lot of suggestions on Twitter, and I might be wrong. It's happened like once.
Okay.
I was wrong. That people see.
Yeah, maybe
it's like
once.
One time. They said that I've seen people suggesting that, well, maybe, you know, J.C. Treader will get into the lineup at right guard, and then they'll slide Lang over to right tackle. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to go with Don Barclay because of our old theory about you try to minimize the question marks, right?
Yeah.
And sliding Treader in. I mean, this could happen. I'd be pretty shocked, but... Now you've got a question mark at right guard, and how will Lang hold up at right tackle?
There's two question marks versus one.
Right, and I'd rather just go with Don Barclay and just pray that it works.
I can see your first theory, or it's not really your theory, everyone else's theory, about moving Lang outside. If they're going to start with Barclay, that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah.
If it's a total train wreck in the first half, could they make the adjustment at halftime?
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
But they're going to make sure that the Barclay experiment's not going to hold up. And the way Don has played this offseason and preseason, it's a good chance that may happen. Or they may try out Josh Walker out there and just keep the four the same. Because the thing is, we always talk about you want to minimize the question marks. Yes, there's going to be one big question mark on the right side of the line. Well, TJ Lang's still pretty good.
Right.
He can hold his own at right guard. He can help minimize the question mark there. Well, then you just focus your offense on the left side of the field, or you have more looks with Kuhn in there or Corliss or whoever, and you give Barclay some help.
That's what I would. That's what I would think would happen. That they'll have Corliss in on that side to help Barclay chip, or, you know, help chip on guys, and you can have Kuhn.
Yeah, they kept Kuhn on this team for a reason. Kuhn doesn't really play much special teams anymore.
Right.
This is the type of game that is the reason why John Kuhn's on this team, and why they kept two fullbacks for that reason.
Right.
Is this type of game.
And I thought Barclay, you know, I thought he got better as the preseason went on, and he wasn't great by the end, but I thought he was at least serviceable by the end. And I think a big part of this, too, is he'll be playing on the right side.
Yeah.
So any sort of pressure that Rodgers sees, at least feels Rodgers at least will be able to see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be like in the preseason when they had him out at left tackle and Rodgers almost got killed. So that I think will help. And like you said, there's a number of ways you can kind of cover for Barclay, running things more to the left or whatever. I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, I know Mike loves J.C. Treader, but I don't see it.
No, I don't either, unless it's the fail-safe that they have to
right.
do it. But man, I could see, we know Mike's a stubborn guy. Treader could be a traitor
no,
for staff.
Not Mike.
Treader could not see the field at all. Like, Barclay could just be a train wreck the whole game.
True.
If you want to be more optimistic about Don Barclay, I don't know if I can be, but it always tosses itself out there for people. Is the dude was playing for the first time in a year this preseason. Could very well just be playing himself into game shape and just get him to speed and everything.
I think that's very true, and I think also, you know, you hear this from guys who tear their ACLs all the time, that like the physical stuff, but it's also the mental of like learning to trust your knee again and trust yourself that the knee won't get hurt if you make certain movements and stuff. So I think that's part of it too. I think it was physical and mental. And I think that's why you saw him sort of slowly get better. And the one thing I always have liked about Barclay is that he's a battler.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Barclay will fight you to the death. And I think that's an admirable quality, especially in a right tackle. So,
and there's going to be a lot of fighting with this Seattle front seven.
They're a bunch of assholes. Can we just say that? I hate that. I hate everybody on Seattle.
Oh, do you? Tell me how you really feel.
But I really hate that defense. I hate it. Especially Michael Bennett. Like, try riding your bike this time, Mike.
Poor Michael Bennett just can't get paid.
He already got paid.
Exactly.
These Seattle guys, what the shit is? These guys are like, oh, I got a big contract a year later. Yeah, I want more money. It's like, you're not like some rookie making $700,000 who had a huge year and is like, why won't they pay me? Like, Michael Bennett already got paid.
Yeah, and Cam Chancellor got paid. Like, yeah, it's these guys who are, it's comical. It really is. Yes, these are all, they have the best defense in the NFL, right? And it's like you pointed out, like Richard Sherman last year wanted to get paid. Why? Because he's making less than $1 million a year. Same thing with Russell Wilson.
Right. Even Earl Thomas was a relative steal at like $3.5 million.
Yeah. But those guys are looking for bigger second contracts. Bennett and Chancellor are looking for bigger third contracts. Like, no, you have to realize your defense is great, but you can't pay them all.
You can't pay them all.
And you already got paid. You already cashed your chips in.
And the Chancellor thing is so funny to me, too, because it's like people go, well, you know, he doesn't want any new money. He just wants money taken from the back end of his contract and pushed to this year. And I'm like, okay. And I'm like, all right, so then here's how that would work if Seattle did it. If they said, okay, Cam, this is what we'll do. We'll do that for you. You know, the second that they get towards the part of that deal and that money that he was supposed to get, he already got, and his salaries kind of are down now, you know he's just going to go, I want more.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like if he was due $7 million in that last year and they took half of that and paid it to him now, well, as soon as you get near that last year and his money is starting to go, he's going to go, no, 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 I want a new contract. So he's basically trying to screw them like two or three different ways here. And I totally get why the Seahawks are like, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah, we already paid you.
We already paid you your money. You're already one of the highest paid players at your position. That's it. I'm not giving you more.
And you know what? You want more of that back-end money? Well, these days, NFL players don't see the end of their contracts. However, some do, or some see most of it.
Right.
But you have to play to see it.
Right, exactly. And it's just so funny to me that people are like, well, he's got to get paid. I'm like, yeah, but I totally, you know, and I don't tend to side with management, but like, I get it. Like, I get where Seattle's coming from. I would do the same thing. I'd say, no, because you're just going to try to screw me in a year from now, which is what Michael Bennett's trying to do right now.
Yeah.
You can't pay everybody.
It's fun to watch from afar because it's a lot of
Go ahead.
Like, I'll just replay the point again. These guys are on their rookie deals. At least I can somewhat side with the players when you're making not a lot of money in your rookie deal and you definitely have all performed it. Seattle's had several guys in that camp: Sherman, Wilson, Bobby Wagner,
yep.
Earl Thomas, Byron Maxwell to an extent, and Maxwell's now playing in Philadelphia. When that happens, then you need to get paid. However, you know, if Bennett and Chance are wanting to get paid more, well, then do better earlier in your career.
Right.
You know, play better earlier.
Right.
And you would have got paid earlier. But however, it's a detriment to them that they're on Seattle, because you can make the argument that, well, you guys play your best football in our defense. Funny how that works.
That made me think.
Whereas you put Sherman or Earl Thomas on any defense in the NFL, they're going to be probably just as good as they are now.
The way you said that made me think of start writing earlier.
Yeah.
Start your effing column earlier. That's what I do. Yeah. No, you're right. It's like, and I mean, these guys are all getting pretty big money. I mean, really, like they're all doing fairly well.
You know, Michael Bennett, don't be an average player languishing on the Bucks for 5 years.
Right. Exactly. It's like, so I don't know what's going to happen with this Chancellor thing. It's going to be interesting to see if the Packers do win on Sunday night. I'm curious to see if Seattle is going to start to cave at all. I don't think they're going to.
I think they would have already if they were.
Yeah, especially after last week, because that defense got scorched pretty good.
I think if Seattle was going to cave, they would have done by week one, like by the start of the season.
It's just funny how – isn't it funny how they were – when they beat the Broncos in that Super Bowl, it was like, we're all one big happy family. Like, we all love each other on this defense, and we're all in this for each other. And then as soon as that success hits, it's like – The Pat Riley thing, the disease of me,
mm-hmm.
it just permeates every part of a great defense or a great, you know, great unit, but in this case, a defense.
You see all those guys who are paid, and then they're all, you know, like a Cam Chancellor, who a couple years ago was all happy, and then you're one, like you said, one big happy family, one big happy defense. We love everybody. We're in this together. Best defense ever. And then, you know, Richard Sherman, fair enough, being like a fifth-round draft pick, went to manage like, I need a new contract.
Right.
And then Chancellor looks at it like, oh, well, if Sherman gets a new contract and he's making more money than me, what the hell? I was the highest-paid D-back on this team 2 years ago. This is not fair. Well, sorry, Richard's a better player than you, and he was making like $600,000.
Right, exactly. And it's just like, and if I was the guy on that defense, I'd be super pissed at Chancellor.
I would be
like,
too.
I really would. Like, hey, man, you got your money. Like, yeah, maybe you feel like you deserve more, but every guy in the NFL just feels like they deserve more. I bet Aaron Rodgers deep down thinks he deserves more. Like, they all do. It's like, so what if you think you deserve more? You got big money. You got more than most guys ever get. Like, get your ass back here. We need you. And I do sense just reading this stuff, both after the game on Sunday and throughout the week, I do sense a lot of disharmony with the Seattle team right now.
Yeah, it's Weapon's the old, you know, saying like, go earn your money. Like, if Chancellor plays and he has an all-pro year, he leads the league in interceptions. Like, if he has an all-pro year, Weapon's, there's a good chance they're going to give you more money next offseason. They're going to have to.
Can you believe he is punting $267,000 a week?
Good for him.
By not showing up. I mean, I get having principles, but Jesus Christ, man. He's punting $267,000 a week by not showing up. Like, okay.
Good for him.
Good for him, I guess, but oof.
I would love it to see, because you talk about the hatred on this towards the Seattle defense and the Seattle team. I don't even know who their backup is right now. I'd say who's starting. But I would love for him to play well. Not Sunday, but play well enough in the next month or so. Whenever Chancellor decides to cave, they bring him back at the exact same – he's going to play. He's like, I can't afford to lose any more money. But his backup's playing so well that they just bench his ass.
That would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
I mean, I just – I don't know. I just think there's a lot of disharmony. I don't think the guys on that team particularly like Russell Wilson.
No, that's been well stated. Russell's not the most popular guy.
I think they look at him as kind of a management stooge a little bit.
He's Mr. Perfect.
is he a robot? I go on this. I talk about this on Twitter a lot. I think he was a robot created to sell products.
I was in the Mall of America on Tuesday night this week, and just walking around doing a little shopping. They have a Bose store in Mall of America. You know, Russell's the big Bose salesman. And they have this big cardboard cutout of him, like, in the storefront. And he's holding, like, this thing of headphones. I don't even know what the saying, the slogan was. But I just looked at him, like, and this is the reason I'm bringing it up, because it's the exact same thing probably been, like, the dude's an effing robot. He really is.
Did you read that Rolling Stone article on him?
Yeah.
Holy shit. I was this guy's a robot. I was like, he's not a human being. Like, just the thing
he's
he
like
says,
him,
I was like, what the
He's a shorter, less funnier, a lot less funnier Peyton Manning. He's basically a shorter Peyton Manning with no humor.
Yeah.
At least Manning's funny.
Or like Derek Jeter, but like without all the chicks.
This is
While
true.
While Russell gets the chicks, he just doesn't sleep with them, apparently.
Poor Ciara. I really feel for her.
That's weird. He's a weird guy, man. If he's a real person, which I'm not sure he is. If he is, then he's just a strange dude.
From everything that's been read and everything you hear is that he doesn't have a whole lot of friends inside the locker room.
No, I think that's pretty fair to say. I don't think him and Marshawn Lynch in particular, I don't think get along too well.
Yeah.
At least Jeter banged all those girls he dated.
At least Jeter smiles every now and
then. That's true too.
I'm going to go out and say this, and Golden Tate may be a really horrible person, but especially in sports, and we've talked about this off there, I think on there a little bit about the Blackhawks and Patrick Sharp, of how, you know, it's probably not good that in any team chemistry, especially with one of your best players, your wife is having an affair with a teammate of yours.
That's just bad news.
And really doesn't give a whole lot of, confidence, per se, or faith?
Yes.
Maybe faith is a bad word. In your quarterback that you can't even hold on your own wife from sleeping with one of your teammates?
I mean, I would think that's part of it, because quarterbacks are supposed to be like the studs.
Yeah, they're supposed to be like, I'm cool, calm, and collective. I got everything in control.
It's a bad look. I sense a lot of sort of disharmony with this team. Then you get like Lynch's mom calling out Daryl Bevel on Facebook.
Oh, that's just hilarious.
Like even that sort of shit, which by the way, I'm glad I brought that up because I would have mentioned. Did Pete Carroll's response where he was like, just a mom standing up for her son, ain't nothing wrong with that. I was like, you could tell that Pete Carroll hates Marshawn Lynch. Hates him. I bet everybody in that organization hates Lynch.
And he knows it. He thrives on it.
He thrives on it. I guarantee it. He knows that nobody there likes him because, you know, he's a distraction. He's a pain in the ass. And, like, they all hate him. But, like, they have to. It's just so funny to watch, you know, how Pete Carroll has to, like, stand up for his guy because they need Lynch to win.
And Lynch knew that in the offseason, too, when he wanted, you know, more money. He knew that Seattle wasn't going to get rid of him. And he knew he didn't get away with anything because I went and talked about, oh, the Seattle will be fine with their two backups, you know, Robert Turbin and Christian Michael. Funny how both of them are not on the team anymore.
Yep.
And that was both those transactions just happened, trades of Cleveland and Dallas. But I would say inside the locker room, that the writing's been on the wall. Especially from what I've read, Christian Michael has been on the way out for at least over a year.
Well, even when they traded Percy Harvin,
yeah.
Lynch didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because that was Lynch's guy.
Love Marshawn Lynch.
You get it. When you stand back and look at all this, you get a picture of a team that there's a lot going on, not even factoring in the classic Super Bowl hangover, but I just sense a lot of like we said, the vibe that they had when they won the Super Bowl was like, we're going to do this for the next 5 years. And now it just feels like a bunch of guys in it for themselves and people taking shots at each other. And, you know, the GM, who I know we all know very well, John Schneider, took a lot of heat. You know, he drafted the kid Clark from Michigan who got all that domestic violence stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even stuff like that, you know what I mean? It's just like, there's a lot of negativity.
Gambling a little bit too much, I think.
What's that?
I think they're gambling a little bit too much.
Yeah.
They
I agree. Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, the Graham trade was a huge gamble.
The Clark draft pick, but just when I say gambling, not so much with transactions, but just personalities on this team where you get confident and cocky that you think you can mold anything together. And
right. Oh, is this kid Clark from Michigan? Oh, did he beat the shit out of that woman in that hotel room? That's all right. We'll get him in our locker room. He'll fit.
You look at the teams that have had the most sustained success over the last 10 years or so. And I would say that the two that are first and foremost are the Packers and the Patriots. And they don't put up with anything. Both Belichick and Thompson get grief sometimes for the shrewd moves they make of not bringing in so-and-so veteran.
Right.
Or not re-signing a guy, or what kind of draft pick is that? But you go there and you know what the plan is.
Yep.
You know what the system is, both front office-wise, both on the field, schematic, but you know basically what to expect.
Yeah, yep.
There's an overall system in place that's going to be abided by. Yep. I don't want to say it's a leadership issue in Seattle, but I think you don't see a lot of calculated risks taken by Thompson, and to a lesser extent taken by a guy like Bill Belichick.
I think you nailed it. And I just think there's a big thing with Seattle, especially when they won the Super Bowl. It was like, this isn't your average football team. Like Pete Carroll and John Schneider, they encourage their guys to have personalities and to speak their mind and be individuals. And now that was great for a minute, but now you're starting to see that over the last year and change, what happens when you have too many guys like that on a team. And like you said, the Packers and the Patriots being the prime examples. Not that their teams don't have personalities, because they do. I mean, Clay Matthews or Rob Gronkowski or whatever, but not to a large extent. You know what I mean? Even McGinn talked about this, and I think in his chat this week about how it was either his chat or one of his articles about how they kind of, especially the Packers, have kind of flushed out a lot of individuality comparatively to the teams that he covered in like the 80s and 90s,
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably the best way to be.
Yeah. Well, let's circle back to talk about Sunday a little bit.
Yeah. That was fun, though. That was good. I like that.
I
don't know if you're listening. I hope you didn't think we went too far into, like, you're listening to the 12th, the 13th man with Adam Summers and Chris Levis. But
no, it's good to see where other teams stand, and it was a good discussion because I think everyone knows how Green Bay needs to attack offensively and defensively. Before we wrap up the podcast today, there's one guy I really want to talk about that I think the Bullock injury and the Barrington injury has overshadowed him a little bit in this week's news, but you and I talked about it before we jumped on tonight, was Randall Cobb was just a complimentary piece last week, and that can't be the case again for week two.
No, I agree.
And I wonder how healthy he really is.
I do, too. He said, first of all, I give Randall Cobb all the credit in the world, because we talked about, like, Bulaga getting his money. Cobb got his money and then some. Cobb didn't have to, like, play. He could have said, look, my shoulder's effed up. I'm not going to play week one.
And we even recommended that.
We did. But Cobber, like, he really wants to get out there and play and help the team. And I respect that. I appreciate that. And he's saying all the right things, of course, while my shoulder didn't get re-aggravated or whatever. But I agree. I'm wondering how effective he's going to. I still feel like at some point he's going to have to miss a week.
Yeah, and if it's going to be a week, it should have been last week. I'm nervous a little bit about Cobb going to this week, because I don't think they can beat Seattle without Cobb being a factor, and he wasn't a factor last week.
I agree. They used him in, like you said, a complimentary role. Go ahead.
I was saying, because James Jones had a really good game. That may not continue I think he's going to be a solid piece, but that may be his best game of the season.
It could be. He could have had four touchdowns.
I know.
He had one that was waved off. He had the two that he caught. One that was waved off due to a holding penalty on, I believe it was Bulaga. And then he had that fourth one that he probably should have caught, but the guy kind of interfered with him. I think it was in the third or fourth quarter. So James Jones could have had four touchdowns last week. Like, that's insanity.
Can we pause for a second? Because I need to pat myself.
Oh, yeah.
Back,
yeah. We got to do this. I can't believe we even mentioned this. We mentioned it during the game on Sunday on Twitter.
Yeah.
Adam Summers.
Who did I say would catch the first touchdown pass of the year?
So the first touchdown? I think you said the first touchdown of the year would be scored.
First touchdown. I said Rodgers would want to get Jones involved early to make him feel part of the team and to build that rapport again.
Boy, did he have.
I said Jones is going to get my bold prediction, Jones would get the first touchdown of the season for the Packers.
You know what I forgot about Jones? I love that he's back. I forgot about how – I don't want to sound like I'm taking a shot at him because I'm not.
Yeah.
But, like, Jordy and Cobb, like, or even, like, a Greg Jennings, like, when they caught touchdowns or when they caught passes, it always looks so smooth. With Jones, it never really looks smooth. It always looks like he's going to drop it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that he does.
Well, there was a point that he used to drop.
Oh, those. My God. I know. I said that to my wife during the game on Sunday. I was like, we used to watch games, Adam and I, and Adam has – this friend of Adam's, Dale. I guess Dale's a friend of mine, too. But we used to watch games, and I was like, every time Jones would drop a pass, we would just look at Dale, and Dale would just go ballistic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it happened quite often. It happened a lot. I forgot about how Jones is good. It's just it's very rarely clean with James Jones.
He likes to make it entertaining.
But he catches it, so that's good. Yeah. But you mentioned Cobb. You know, another player I think is going to be a big factor, and his injury has been overshadowed, is Morgan Burnett. We haven't talked about Burnett. I think Burnett... If you sort of doubted Burnett's importance to this defense, I bet you didn't after last Sunday. Because I'm talking to the listeners now. Because I think he might be the most important player on that defense, or one of the two or three most, anyway.
He will be on Sunday, because if you want to put 7-8 guys in the box and shut down Lynch, and they should, or if you want to put even so much like a spy on Marshawn Lynch, which wouldn't be a bad idea. If it's not Clay Matthews, it's Morgan Burnett.
Burnett is so good at coming down and being an in-the-box safety, because he can cover. He's just not like a center fielder cover. That's where he got into trouble, especially in 2013, was they asked him to be something he's not. But he can cover in short spaces. And when he can play down in the box, that's where he's really effective, because he can cover down there, but he can get up. He's got quickness to get near the line of scrimmage. He can get after the quarterback even if they ask him to. He's very, very vital to this defense, and not having him on Sunday hurt. I think it hurt in a big way, and it's going to be nice to get him back this week.
Yeah, it will be.
And haha, Clinton Dix, speaking of safeties, it's getting tough to watch him out in space. He's really struggling tackling guys out in space.
Yeah, that's not his forte. That's why him and Burnett complement each other so well.
Right, and I think
Burnett can't do
two roles last week.
Yeah, and he can't.
No.
Not yet.
No, I think Clinton Dix will be fine. I said this on Twitter. I don't know if anybody, if you didn't follow, if you didn't see it. Leroy Butler was talking, but they're asking Leroy Butler on the radio here in Milwaukee, why is Dix struggling so much in space? And he goes, you know, it's funny, I think he was talking about early in his career, he had trouble with it. And he goes, I went back, I had the tape guy put together all my miss. He's getting close enough to the guy before I went to for the hit. Mm-hmm. I was lunging too soon. And then McGinn and his game, his rating the Packers thing on Tuesday said the same thing. So if you're wondering why Burnett's struggling, or Clinton Dix, that's why.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I thought that was interesting. I wanted to throw that in.
Yeah. Well, should we get to picks?
I think it's time.
Yeah.
Start us off, Adam.
So no Brian Bulaga. That's going to hurt. That's really going to hurt. I want to have Nathan Barkley, but I can't. I just hope he's below average. If he's average, this team wins. If he's below average, this team could still win. I just hope he's not a complete train wreck. So my ceiling for Don Barkley is below average. It's going to be nice to get Clinton Dix back. It's going to be nice to get Dayton Jones. Not Clinton Dix. It's going to be nice to get Morgan Burnett back. And Dayton Jones. And Raji. If Raji can keep this up, how we kind of discussed how they can attack the Seattle offense and contain Marshawn Lynch. If they contain Marshawn Lynch, I have no problem saying that Rodgers can put 3 or 4 touchdowns on the board at home. Rodgers will find ways to attack a Cam Chancellor-less defense. They'll patch together this offense line the best they can, especially on the right side. Cobb has to get healthier. He's probably going to miss a week at some point. But you look at St. Louis had success running the ball against Seattle with Benning Cunningham. And it's, you know, Eddie Lacy's no Benning Cunningham. I'm just kidding. Well, he's not, because he's 10 times better.
Oh, yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is I'm not picking the Packers to lose this game. I have my concerns more so than I did last week. If Barkley's a complete train wreck, if Burnett can't come back healthy, if Cobb still looks like a complimentary piece, they will lose this game. It's a very real possibility they could lose this game.
Right.
But I'm encouraged enough at home. I think Rodgers loves playing the chip on his shoulder. I have Green Bay winning this game 23-20.
I think it's time. I think it's time for the Packers to finally get past these guys. I'm picking the Packers to win for a lot of the same reasons you mentioned. I think the biggest one is Rodgers. You nailed it right at the end there. I think Rodgers...
We haven't talked about 12 at all.
I think 12 has spent all offseason stewing about that NFC Championship game because he was hurt. And I think in his mind, it was, if I was healthy, I would have buried these guys. And he's, by the way, right. They would have. He's like, we would have buried these guys. And I wasn't healthy then. I'm healthy now. Everybody in the country is tuning in to watch this game. Probably going to be gigantic ratings for NBC. I'm going to give everybody a show. I'm going to show you guys why I'm the best player in football, bar none. There will be other factors in this game. Burnett's return, I think, will help. I think the Packers will be able to have not quite a Rams level of success against Seattle's offensive line, but close. I think they'll keep Lynch in check. He'll get some yards, but he's not going to have 157 like he did in the NFC Championship game. They'll keep Lynch in check. But again, I think it all comes back to Aaron Rodgers. I think he's going to have a huge game. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to probably end up throwing for somewhere close to 300 yards and at least three, if not four, touchdowns. I think he's been waiting for this moment. And so when you put it all together, I have the Packers winning this game by a final of 28-20.
Love it.
Well stated,
Mr. Olympus.
Thank you. As was yours. I just think this is Rodgers. Like you said, man, he loves playing with a chip on his shoulder, and I think all offseason, all he's been thinking about is they don't think I can get past these guys. They think this is the one team that's going to be a thorn in my side, like the Cowboys were to Favre. Bullshit. I don't know. It's bullshit. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I like the Packers. I think it's time. If you can't beat them now, you're never gonna.
Yeah, and we didn't talk about Rodgers at all, and I agree with you 100%. We spent a whole podcast on talking about Aaron Rodgers up until the very end.
You know why I think it is? I think it was Greg Rosenthal from NFL.com tweeted this the other night. But all the great performances we saw in week one across the league, and like hardly anybody mentioned Rodgers. And he's like, I think it's because we're so spoiled by it. We've just come to expect it. Mm-hmm. You know, you see this with great athletes. You see this with great baseball players, right? Mm-hmm. Like Pujols had that for a long time where he didn't win MVP awards and shit, even though he was putting up the same numbers. You know what I mean? It's like.
He creates such a level of success that it's just sustained year in, year out. So you just kind of assume it and forget about it.
Well, we know Rodgers is great, but let's talk about how great the Bills looked or how great, you know, St. Louis's defense looked or.
No one's surprised what Rodgers does anymore.
Right. No one's surprised. I think people are going to be surprised by Sunday night, though, because I don't think a lot of people – I think the majority of the country thinks the Packers are going to win, but I don't know if anybody's expecting it to be like this big offensive showing, and I think it's going to be.
Well, there you have it. That's the definitive Packers prediction.
And Adam Summers is going to the game on Sunday night. Have we even mentioned that yet, that you're going?
No. I'm so excited. So freaking excited.
Are you going to go to Rod? Did you see I tweeted at you earlier?
I really want to.
Are you going to go to the Roger Goodell fan town hall?
I'm going to look in the details and see if I can make it work because I kind of want to live tweet that event.
That would be so funny if you could. I love that Goodell, by the way, in the midst of all this heat, seems to be clinging to the Green Bay Packers. He was at the game last week. Now he's going to Lambeau this week. It's like, he's like, the Packer fans are at least somewhat merciful.
Not if I get a hold of him.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, that's why when I saw that tweet, I was like, oh my God, Adam, you got to go.
But this year, we also realized the Packer fans are the most drunk. So
especially for a night game.
There's a bunch of wild cards. Yeah.
Especially for a night game, because you know people are going to start getting to those lots at like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Lambeau, I expect Lambeau. They've been really pumping up the Get Loud Lambeau thing this week. I think Lambeau's going to be like explosively loud on Sunday night.
And how I kind of mentioned in our pre-recording is that I haven't been to a warm weather game in a while, and this is just for the festiveness, just for people with drinking all day and not worrying about the weather. I think it's going to even add an extra element for people getting just rowdy and drunk, because you can drink all day outside wearing shorts and a t-shirt.
You're going to have all day to sit outside in the nice weather and drink and think about how much you hate the Seattle Seahawks. You have people doing that for like 6 or 7 hours. I have no doubt in my mind Lambeau is going to be ridiculously loud on Sunday night.
Oh, it's going to be
fun. It's going to be so much fun. I'm so jealous of everybody going. It's going to be great.
Well, until next week, I'm Adam Summers.
And I'm Chris Lepesis.
Should we just close out? Get loud, Lambeau. Loud.
This Green Bay Packers podcast is brought to you by Mayfield Sports Marketing, our official sports marketing agent for player appearances. To book a Packers player for your next event, go to PackersTalk.com. Click on Player Appearances. Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.